Hello and welcome to the Curious Bodhi Podcast. I'm your hostess, Jnana B. I pay homage to the three jewels, the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and I pay homage to the Buddha himself and all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas who have come before him, who are here on earth now and will come after him in this universe and in other universes and other realms unseen by the naked eye. It is my hope that I communicate this through the being of the Dhamma and articulate it correctly so that it is understood by all beings and for the welfare of all beings who are listening and who are not listening. First, I just want to say that I may take time off from the podcast to go within and really practice and strengthen the Dhamma. It occurred to me that I'm not taking enough time, especially with the pandemic happening, which is actually great news because you can sit down and go inside whenever you want without pressure. And I'm not taking this opportunity enough to really, really, really go deep and understand. So there may be bigger gaps between, but I promise this will be for the greater benefit of all beings because I do not want to rush and articulate what I do not know. With that being said, I thought it would be a good time to go over what the essence of Buddhism is about and what's actually important. I have studied many types of Buddhism, Theravada, Mahayana, and Tantra, or Tibetan Buddhism, and there are many other forms such as Zen and this and that, but came to my attention that sometimes we try to make it way too complicated. For example, if you go straight from nothing into Tibetan Buddhism, it might come as a big shock to your brain because it's full and rich with ritual and very, very exact esoteric symbolism, and the teachings are quite difficult to grasp. Maybe not for everybody, but especially for a Western audience. And they're very, very specific. So if you think, oh, this sounds great, it's really creative, it's awesome, that's absolutely wonderful. But just know that you may go off the deep end. So what I want to do is go over the fundamentals of Buddhism and why we practice starting from the beginning and not to go over our heads. I did a great podcast with an interviewee named Shambhavi, who is into Trika Shaivism. It's some episodes back, but she said a very important thing that stuck in my mind. She said, don't pretend to be a spiritual person. You have to start where you are. Don't just copycat other people and what you think is quote-unquote spiritual. Be realistic and start where you are. Start with what you know and start with what you don't know and just be honest. That's the first thing. So if we're honest with ourselves from the beginning, we're going to have a much easier ride following the Dhamma. We've already been blessed to receive this information, either Dhamma or Dharma, Sanatana Dharma, any great ancient tradition with wisdom as its base cause. So because we are blessed enough to know this already, you don't really have to worry and you don't have to make it so complicated. We begin with the Eightfold Path. This is exactly why the Buddha laid out the Eightfold Path in a manner that is easy to comprehend and by numbers. So he uses numbers a lot. And that's with a purpose. So at the first rung of the ladder, you have right understanding. And then you go right up the ladder to the end, number 8, right concentration. Now, many people say you don't have to follow the steps. You don't have to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. But I think it's quite helpful to actually reevaluate every single rung of the ladder. The reason the Eightfold Path starts with right understanding is because if you don't know where you're going or what goal you have or an understanding of what is meant even by the Eightfold Path, then you're going to end up possibly in a different direction or nowhere at all. So right understanding is fundamental and really important. It's also translated as right view, or in other words, just having clarity of the purpose of what you're doing. It's the fundamental basic principle, right view. Right view. The second most important aspect of Buddhism is compassion. This word is thrown around a lot, like left and right, because we hear compassion for animals, compassion in other ways, maybe academic ways. But compassion really means the extension of goodwill or good feelings and true love from your true self, your true essence, towards all beings. In other words, you have the right view, you're on the path, you've entered the stream, you've heard all these great things, you're really positive about Buddhism and yourself and all this stuff, and you have to take that and let it out to all beings. Because once you train yourself, train your mind, then you can be of service to others and show compassion. So start where you are. For example, if you have a lot of anger or resentment in your life, which many people do, just because it's nothing abnormal. It's totally human. We're all human. We all have emotions. But these are called hindrances, and they just hinder you springing forth the compassion for all beings. Because if you're angry, you're going to pass on your anger. If you're compassionate and loving, you're going to pass on your love. So it's just like a chain reaction. That's why cultivating compassion or love is so important. And this whole unconditional love business is a whole nother issue, because this word, love, can mean many things. Actually, I do not believe it's expressible in words. What is unconditional love? The best way I can describe it from my own experience is starting with right understanding that everything, no matter if it's called positive or negative, left, right, up, down, animal, human, deva, dakini, devil, anything, is to be unconditionally loved or accepted. You may have heard the term radical self-acceptance. That is not a new agey thing. That's what it is. So loving the parts of yourself and others that normally irk you or upset you, and taking reality as it is rather than pushing it away. That's a whole different subject. Many other teachers are really great and better, much better than me at explaining how to properly not spiritually bypass or not miss the mark on just covering up your emotions or your traumas. There's a lot of really great teachers. Craig Holiday is a good one. But yeah, really just start where you are, and those are the two fundamental points of Buddhism and what it means to be following the Dhamma. One good example of this is a sutta I was just listening to called the Mulipariyaya Sutta. It's a middle-length discourse of the Nikaya side. And the Buddha, actually, sutta readings are really interesting because on the surface, they seem very mundane and boring the way that they are written. But once you dig deeper and get that clear understanding of what they mean, it's like, wow, you might be blown away. So I just want to share from that sutta one fundamental point that the Buddha made that we can get into when studying our meditation or when doing contemplation and really see what it means. The Buddha is adamant about the restriction eventually of the senses, and that comes at the end of the path, right concentration or samadhi. So literally, and I haven't been here yet, but I will, don't worry, you end your sense input and output. So you're not aware of your smelling, tasting, touching, hearing, and you are not aware of your body image as it is commonly accepted because, and this is also an interesting point, our body image is given to us by our parents, usually, and it differs from culture to culture. So not everybody pictures themselves the same exact way, and often the way we picture ourselves is not how others view us. So we are carrying around a conception of our body in our brains or somewhere in our consciousness because it would be really difficult to function, such as taking a shower. You need to wash your head to do that, so you need to know where your head is, for example. It would be really difficult to function without that conception, but we take it all too seriously. So in samadhi, or at the end of the path, the conception of the body falls away so that, first of all, we do sense something, but we don't have such a solid image of our body in our head. We can just sense. So if you put your hands together, you can feel the warmth, you can feel the skin, and you take just sensing as sensing. But you don't say, these are my hands, and these are definitely hands. Because as we know, the Buddha also deconstructed everything and figured out that everything is made of smaller and smaller things until the essence of them becomes obsolete, and that is emptiness. But from the sutta that I mentioned, the Mulipariyaya Sutta, he goes over in not delighting in different things. So he says, take earth as earth, gods as gods, Brahma as Brahma, water as water, fire as fire, etc. But do not call them mine, and do not delight in them. And when I read this, I was like, huh? Why would I not delight in the earth? I mean, we're taught, especially now with everybody being green and this and that, that we should delight in the earth, delight in animals, delight in our partners, delight in all this sensory input, and see it as something sensual or pleasant. But when I pulled that sutta apart, I understood why he was saying that. If we are always going outwards towards what is pleasant or unpleasant and judging it, then we have no chance to reach samadhi, whether in meditation or just doing regular things like walking around or gardening or cooking. Because often we are enamored with the objects outside, earth or even ideas. Some come to us in meditation about gods or pleasant thoughts, nice thoughts, negative thoughts. And to not delight in them or not cling to them as mine means that we can take a step back and eventually reach the goal, nibbana, which means I can't pretend to conceptualize it, but which means we are in the world but not of it. So that's really interesting. I encourage you to check out some Buddhist suttas and find their deeper meaning and connect the dots and why he sang what he sang. That's also another reason I'm taking time out, because I want to reach different meditative states, such as the jhanas, and come back with a new conception of self, or what the Buddha would say, a new conception of not self. Because really, it takes will to do this. It takes will, it takes willpower, it takes effort, and it takes sitting down and not giving up. So there you go with that. The other point that's really fundamental about Buddhism, Dhamma, Dharma in general, is having a healthy skepticism. We need to balance our compassion with intellect and wisdom. This is why the Tibetan Buddhists always have really rough debates. They do all their meditation, they do all their monk stuff, they take alms, but at the end of the day, they have really crazy, fiery debates about what the Buddha meant. And they're really interesting, actually. But if you throw away one or the other, you will not be fully rounded. And this mind is meant to create a better universe, a better world, a better you, and a better me. So the mind, we don't have to throw it away. It's not bad to think. We need to use it, and we need to use it to question. The Buddha always said, famously, to never ever just believe him because he said it, and to look at him as a figure. We need to investigate and do something ourselves to know if what he's saying is true or not. So I find it interesting that at school, traditional schools, we were taught what to think, but not how to think. The Buddha would be really proud if we took a sutta and read it and pulled it apart and analyzed the details and actually concentrated on what this means in the bigger sense, rather than just passively taking it as some kind of information and putting it into a folder so we can repeat it later. That's not what it's for, actually. It's for analyzing and coming to a conclusion through reading and practice that makes it valuable, actually. So having a skeptical mind is something I have been not even consciously working on, but it's happening itself. So instead of taking the information that I find, I will play around with it in my head until it joins with something. And if something doesn't make sense, then I have to throw it out. There's no other option until there's some other evidence to the contrary. And I think we should all be doing that. During this time, when we're not meditating or working on our hobbies, we should be working on our critical thinking skills. There's different ways we can do that and train, but it's very important to come to some understanding. And now that I mentioned that, yesterday I was hearing a talk about the jhanas. And the speaker was talking us through how to get to the first, second, third, and fourth jhanas, and what that actually means. And he took the practice up with us and had us, you know, get in touch with what it means to be in the first jhana. He didn't just say, I'm explaining this to you and you have to accept it, and this is this and this and this. No, he made us reconceptualize our bodies. That's where I got the idea of talking about the body. So it's quite fun to play around with these things. I encourage it. And the Buddha always stressed to have common sense. Use your mind and don't just discard it. We need to find our blind spots. We really need to find our blind spots. The Buddha was not a guru. He was a spiritual friend. There was a story about a man who always followed the Buddha around for a while. He was literally following him around and praising him. And he was so enamored by him. And the Buddha was like, dude, why are you doing that? And the guy said, oh, I just want to be near the Buddha. I love the Buddha. Which is beautiful, actually. It's nice, but it's sort of childish. Anyway, and the Buddha said, don't follow the Buddha because the Dhamma is the Buddha. And the Dhamma is in you, in your heart. That's really important, to not just sit down and worship somebody, because the Buddha was not a person. He was not a normal person. It's hard to comprehend, but I know others alive today who are also not normal people. They are in a different dimension of consciousness, and it is apparent because I have listened to them, analyzed, and I can see in their eyes. The eyes are the window to their soul, right? I can see when I look if somebody has qualities that shine or if they're lying or covering something up. And there are beings that are flat out different. They are still pumping blood through their veins, but they are on a different plane. That's where we want to get. We don't want to be normal people anymore. We don't take this reality as something solid and something to cling to, like the Buddha was saying in the sutta, this earth will pass away. All of my possessions will pass away. My family will pass away. Me or my body. See, I just caught myself. Me. That's who I think I am. This will all pass away. And if it's going to pass away, I might as well not take it so seriously. So if the Buddha was not a normal person and was at a much different and higher level of consciousness, filled with peace and bliss, then we can do that too. The Buddha's teaching, the Dhamma, is not a dead thing. It's a living thing that we can try. We can study it both with our mind, but also with our practices and our heart. So, I'm not going to talk too much about who the Buddha was or was not. I'll tell you when I'm in Nibbana what it's like. Definitely. And I hope you come with me. But I want to end with a relevant topic about this shift we are in consciousness. This pandemic is actually a beautiful time. If we stop reading headlines, which are just blah blah, input, output, as per usual, we can see the unfolding of events and choose where it goes from here. Because it doesn't matter if you're in China, it doesn't matter if you're in Australia or Japan or Tibet or the USA or Canada or Spain or Antarctica. What matters is that we're all in the same situation and we all have a collective chance now to create something different. This is unprecedented in history. As a globe, we are now like a global village. So if you're unemployed, you're not alone. Many millions of billions of people around the world are unemployed. So you can look around and say, hey, I'm not the only one who's pregnant. There's lots of pregnant women here. I'm not the only one who's whatever, because now we're a big global village. And that's pretty cool, because now we get to decide where it goes. And that's power. And I don't mean power like power hungry, but that's our true power, to create something different in our economic system, in the way that we interact as communities, in our creative visions, and putting some balance and perspective back on each other and on life. The way I saw things going was headed towards treachery. I'm sure that a lot of people, whatever field they're in, know that about the environment, about politicians and the people who are in power. We all had a sense that things were a little bit and we were sick of it. So this pandemic, now take what you want from this, but I believe, and I feel the evidence of this within myself, but take this with a pinch of salt, what I say. I believe it was our purposeful doing. This was not an accident. It was not a random event. It was our karma, and it was happening because at a level, some level, we wanted this to happen. We weren't happy. We weren't excited about the future, and we knew that there was something wrong as a collective group. So because we had this intuitive force, this sort of karmic event took us and just threw us off the cliff and said, okay, there's something wrong. Now let's all fix it. So we can't see this as sort of an ending, because the world is not going to end. I really don't think so. It could. Nothing's impossible, right? But I don't think the world is going to end. I don't think we're in the end times or anything like that. This is a chance to pick up the pieces and really start fresh. So I hope that we take this as a time of ruminating within and churning something, so that when we come out on the other side, we have new rules to play by. We have new values, and we can create a more dharmic, sattvic society or collective. There is talk about the Golden Age, and if you've studied Kali Yuga or the Yugas in general, that Golden Age could be coming soon. But I've always had this internal knowing that something really, really, really good would happen in my lifetime. And I'm still waiting for that moment. It was one of those insightful moments where I had this, I don't know, some people call it a download, but it was shown to me that something really, really, really good would happen in my lifetime. And this came out of nowhere. So I was like, what? What does that even mean? But this could be the really, really good thing that's going to happen. And I'm very hopeful. And we can all change from here on out. So whatever you want, imagine this is the slate being wiped clean for us. That's amazing. We don't have to deal with the past. That already happened. And we don't have to grasp at the future, because our futures right now are very uncertain. So you can be happy knowing that you are completely thrown off the cliff with everyone else. You're in the unknown. You are not secure. And you can take that chance to figure things out, not just with your mind, but also with your heart. And we can create something much, much more amazing and lighthearted than was previously. So with that, I will let you go. I'm still accepting emails. If you have a chance to go to my website, have a look. I do have some donation things there. I've never received a penny for what I'm doing, and I don't anticipate it. It's very Buddhist. But if you feel like, you can check it out, because I do offer some guided meditations, very personalized, and I love helping people. So do what you will with that. And when I come back from my sabbatical, I will tell you how it goes. And peace, love, and dharmic living to you.